Srila Prabhupada writes, the most widely recognized scriptures in the world are the Vedas. The Vedas have been divided into four parts, Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva. The subject matter of the Vedas is very difficult for a man of ordinary understanding. For elucidation, the four Vedas are explained in the historical epic called the Mahabharata and in 18 Puranas. The Ramayana is also a historical epic which contains all the necessary information from the Vedas. So the four Vedas, the original Ramayana by Valmiki, the Mahabharata and the Puranas are classified as Vedic literatures. The Upanishads are parts of the four Vedas, and the Vedanta Sutras represent the cream of the Vedas. To summarize all these Vedic literatures, the Bhagavad Gita is accepted as the essence of all the Upanishads and the preliminary explanation of the Vedanta Sutras. One may then conclude that from the Bhagavad Gita alone, one can have the essence of the Vedas, for it is spoken by Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who descends upon this material world from the anti-material world in order to give complete information of the superior form of energy, easy journey to other planets, anti-material worlds. Okay. So here we have the Upangas. We've given going through all that. So these Puranas we can see is that they are like, they explain the Veda. How do they explain it? They explain it through histories of actually people who have acted according to the Veda. Right? Because otherwise, then there's always the thing of the aspect of, okay, well, I've heard the philosophy, I either can't get a grasp on it, on how you make it practically applicable, or we might think it's not practically applicable. So therefore, there's an example in the histories of people applying it in their life, and it's consistent and it's constant. There's always things going on. There's always, all the principles that are implied in the Veda are being followed by these people in histories. Right? And it's always the same kind of thing. So you can see the patterns, you can see the lifestyle. And then this way you can apply that in your lifestyle. It's not the little detail that's there. It's the main principle that's there. You know, they're attentive to their sadhana, they're attentive to their subjects, they're attentive to their studies, they're attentive to their duties. That everybody can apply in their life. It's not getting into too much detail. Even when it's talking about Arjuna fighting, it talks, he has his bow, he has his guard, his finger, guards. You know, he shoots his arrows, he has the quivers, but it doesn't get into fine detail about that. There's other shastras for that. Because the point of having the proper facility, being focused on that, maintaining that facility, and applying that that knowledge and skills, then one gets your result. Right? And he's doing it in a Krishna conscious way. He understands the teachings of the Gita, so now he's doing that with knowledge for Krishna. That anyone can do, right? In the life, anyone can do that. You just have to know how to take the example. In other words, what is meant? So this is very, very important. If that can be understood, so much of human society or human social interaction is then, properly understood. Because otherwise then we don't understand what the person's saying, because the words they use may not reflect what it is that they mean. Does that make sense? It does in a certain way, but it can be more direct, more indirect. Right? Arjuna is fighting on the battlefield, right? In the war, you could say, oh, he's expressing all this and that. No, this virtue, this is duty, this is what a king works. You see that, then the battle makes sense. Right? So you have to be able to see what is behind what's being done. In other words, there's the action itself, but there's the mentality behind it. When one can see the mentality, then you can actually understand what has been done or said. Right? Does that make sense? So this is a very important element of human life, because human life is mixed. It's not just straightforward in that it's always just goes in one direction. it's always nice, it's always nice, it keeps going nice, everything works perfectly. No, there's always ups and downs. It's just designed like that. The demigods, it's always nice. The hellish planets, it's always bad. So the earthly planets means it's mixed. So by definition, it will be mixed. Now, is the chutney sweet or is it sour? Right? It's both. You know, so depending on what's there, you appreciate one or the other. Right? The taste, you like the sweetness for its effect on the digestion, you know, you appreciate the sour. Right? So both of these are there. So in the material, it means in the human culture then means we have to be able to deal with both of these. Right? So then that means we need examples and then people applying it. So then the Veda becomes real for us. Question? The Veda becomes real for us. Otherwise we tend to think it's not real. But the problem is those who think it's not real, they themselves are not real. Right? Because they don't actually know its reality. Right? Of course, there's the reality of course, paying the bills, this, that. That's a reality. But the thing is, what's behind? Why are you paying bills? This is what we're talking about. Bills are being paid, but why are bills being paid? Right? They're being paid because of, you know, some particular form of relationship or attachment. Otherwise, why would you be paying bills? Right? Why are the bills there? Why do you have a mortgage on the house? Right? Because you need a house. Why do you need a house? Because there's a family. Why is a family? Because of the need for that relationship, that interaction. So therefore, paying the bills is part of family interaction. Okay, so in this way then Puranas, then they give that practical application. But that's what we got into. That practical application that gives that example, it may not be exactly the situation you're in the way of the externals, but it will be the situation you're in the mood. Or what's the situation? You know what I'm saying? You're having a problem with let's say partners in a business. That's a general problem. The specifics of it, that's always going to be unique every case. Every business, every partnership is going to be slightly different. But the principle of how it functions is going to be the same. So therefore, when we see that there's a problem that's discussed in the Vedas of having example of this, it does apply to us if you know how to use it. If you don't know how to use it, don't say the Vedas are impractical. Say, I am not intelligent enough and practical enough to be able to connect the Shastra to my day-to-day life. That's what we should say, right? And then that's what Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra is for, to teach us that. But to say the Veda is to blame, then you have to be foolish. That's the basis of all our existence. Right? You don't have spiritual life without the Veda. So to blame the Veda, to blame the Shastra, one has to be foolish. Because if you remove that, what do you have? Then it's each individual and their speculation. That's all you have left. You don't have anything else left. Therefore, the Shastra is never accosted. We never blame or go after or find fault in the scripture. It's just, we just don't do that. So Upanishads. The Upanishads are the final portion of the Vedas. They have a special significance and thus deserve a special attention. The Upanishads are important because they are widely recognized as an authoritative source of knowledge. All Sampradayas, the four Vaishnava schools and the followers of Adi Shankara, base their teachings on the Upanishads. Since the other schools do not usually accept Srimad Bhagavatam as the most authoritative evidence, in the past, the Gaudiya Acharyas had to quote from the Upanishads in order to establish their conclusions. Consequently, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had his Bhakti Shastri courses in Gaudiya Math, the Upanishads were included as part of the studies. Srila Prabhupada, in several places in his books and lectures, stresses the importance of giving reference from the Upanishads. Quote, Upanishads are the headlines of the Vedas. Just like in a chapter there is a headline. Similarly, these Upanishads are the headlines of the Vedas. There are 108 Upanishads, principle. Out of that, 9 Upanishads are very important. So out of those 9 Upanishads, Svetasvatara Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, Aitareya Upanishad, Isha Upanishad, Mukunda, Mundaka Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad, Kata Upanishad, these Upanishads are very important. And wherever there is an argument on some point, one has to give reference from these Upanishads. If one can give reference from the Upanishads, then his argument is very strong. Shabda Praman. Praman means evidence. Evidence. If you want to gain in your case, just like you have to give every nice evidence in a court. Similarly, according to Vedic culture, the evidence is Praman. Praman means evidence. Shabda Praman. Srila Prabhupada lecture, November 27, 1968, Los Angeles. The Upanishads are widely recognized not only in India but in the West as well. Their lofty esoteric teachings have drawn the attention of many scholars and philosophers. For example, quote, the famous German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer became completely enchanted by the Upanishads. Upon reading a translation into Latin, he called them the production of the highest human wisdom. Considering the Upanishads to contain almost superhuman conceptions, Schopenhauer said, it is the most satisfying and elevating reading which is possible in the world. It has been solace in life and will be the solace of my death. Devamrita Swami, In Search of Vedic India. Although the Western scholars generally do not view the Upanishads as absolute spiritual authority, as the Indian transcendentalists do, the Upanishadic texts are still considered as one of the most important sources of knowledge in the Vedic tradition. Consequently, preaching from the Upanishads would be appreciated among the scholars both in the East and in the West. Besides the importance for the preaching mission, the Upanishads are of great value for the devotees themselves. Knowledge of the Upanishads can strengthen the faith of the sadhakas to deepen the knowledge and understanding of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada writes, quote, the Vaishnavas are by far the greatest philosophers in the world, and the greatest among them was Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu, whose philosophy was again presented less than 400 years later by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj. Therefore, one must know very well that Vaishnava philosophers are not sentimentalists or cheap devotees like the Sahajiyas. All the Vaishnava Acharyas were vastly learned scholars who understood Vedanta philosophy fully. For unless one knows Vedanta philosophy, he cannot be an Acharya. To be accepted as an Acharya among Indian transcendentalists who follow the Vedic principles, one must become a vastly learned scholar in Vedanta philosophy, either by studying it or hearing it. Bhakti develops in pursuance of Vedanta philosophy. This is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.12. Then quoting this verse, Tach Tadatana Munayo, Jnana Vairagya Yukaya, Pashantyatmani Chatmanam Bhaktya Shruta Grihityaya. These words, Bhakti Shruta Grihitaya, in this verse are very important, for they indicate that bhakti must be based upon the philosophy of the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra. Srila Rupa Goswami said, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidin Vina. Aikantiki Hader Bhaktir Utpatyatyaiva Kalpate. Devotional service performed without reference to the Vedas, Puranas, Pancharatras, etc., must be considered sentimentalism, and it causes nothing but disturbance to society. There are different grades of Vaishnavas, Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. But to be a Madhyamadhikari preacher, one must be a learned scholar in the Vedanta Sutra and other Vedic literatures. Because when bhakti yoga develops on the basis of Vedanta philosophy, it is factual and steady. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.101. Okay. Like when you go to school, right? Bhakti yoga is developed on the basis of Vedanta philosophy, 101. A sincere devotee must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, and other literatures left by the previous authorities, or Goswamis, for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless, and therefore a set sort of disturbance in the path of devotional service. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 7.102 purport. So that's 102, right? 101 is that bhakti is based on the Vedanta Sutra, and two, if you're not willing to hear it, then you're a disturbance to society, basically. So it's like, yes. Interesting how these work, you know. So it's very, very important that the Vedanta Sutra is, the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutra, the Upanishads are the basis, because that is the philosophy of the Veda. We are based on philosophy. Our culture is based on the philosophy. In other words, on the tattva, you have the rasa. The culture is coming from that. So if we don't base it on there, then it will be sentimentalism. And we see that the sentimentalism doesn't actually give the benefit it promises. People have been promising for years. They have not been able to deliver to date. It has not happened. Why? Because it's not based on the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra. It's not philosophical. It's sentimental. So, therefore, what is based on that, then that is applied properly in the proper understanding, proper relationships, time, place, and circumstance, all that. That will work. But it still has to be properly understood and applied. It can't be vox populi, it can't be political correctness, it can't be modern, you know, social standards or moralities or economics. These can all be part of the concept, but they cannot be the driving force. The driving force has to be the philosophy, you know, behind the devotional process. Right? So therefore we can't reject the Veda and accept, you know, modern writers, and then think our devotional service will be strong. No, it will be a disturbance. You know, if to nobody else, then to ourselves. Because we won't advance as nicely as we could. Does that make sense? Right? So the whole idea is that giving is that there's a solid foundation. The Vedas are the basis of that, then the Upanishads are the essence of that. Prabhupada said, like the headlines, you know, this is exactly what the chapter is explaining. So what the Upanishads explain is what the Veda is explaining. So based on that, then our acharyas have written, and then from that they have proven, therefore, our whole devotional process. We see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, like in the afternoon class, he's quoting from Upanishads, and he's talking about Radha and Krishna. So he's seeing Radha and Krishna in the explanations of the Upanishads. So he's establishing through Chaitanya Charitamrita, but to give the basis of it, then he quotes Upanishads. Because everybody will accept Upanishads. It's the one thing that anybody who accepts Vedic literature will accept. And as being pointed out here, is that even the Western philosophers will appreciate it. Upanishads, they all know, is it something solid in the foundation. They may have their own idea, but they'll at least have to take the statements as authoritative, and the angle you're coming from, it has a basis. Like that. Whether they want to accept that, whether they want to follow that, that's another question. But at least it will be appreciated. So we see that's why in this first study, then Bhagavad Gita, and Ishupanishad, because it's probably mentioned before, is that you have all the Vedic literature is then, the essence of it is given in the Upanishads. The essence of that is given in the Vedanta Sutra. So now the Bhagavad Gita is then the preliminary to the Vedanta Sutra, and it is the essence of the Upanishads. Right? And so then it's very nice. So then an Ishupanishad of the Upanishads is always considered as the foremost. Everybody accepts Ishupanishad. It's the main, because it's the only Upanishad that's in the Vedic literature, in the Samhita. So it becomes special in that way. Everybody accepts that. So then if you've studied Ishupanishad and Bhagavad Gita, then you know the philosophy. Now then, to apply that into your life, into your devotional practices, into your devotional relationships, then you have nectar devotion and Upadeshamrita. Right? So then you have the proper balance. You have the philosophy, you have the culture. You know, you're set. Right? then you can practice, you can preach. You know, it's good. It's well thought out. It's not arbitrary like that. This is something very well thought out. We can see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established these concepts of degrees. Prabhupada's taken it to the point, how we study it. And so then, you know, it's well thought out by two great personalities. So continuing, the Upanishads constitute the philosophical section of the Vedas. They give spiritual knowledge about the impersonal Brahman and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Upanishads are called Vedanta. That means they reveal the ultimate meaning of the Vedas, which goes beyond the ritualistic ceremonies for material prosperity, as is stated in Gita Upanishad, the essence of all the Vedas. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunyo Bhavarjuna. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature, O Arjuna. Become transcendental to these three modes. Bhagavad Gita 2:45. Right, so it means the rituals are important because you're establishing a whole social fabric. Fabric needs ritual. It needs a form. Right? Because otherwise, how do you have all the different aspects of relationship are able to be satisfied unless there is some ritual? Otherwise, everybody's going to have their own idea how they do this. Right? I'm saying, if we go by, you know, somebody comes and decides, you know, okay, he's going to, you know, propose and he's going to, you know, give a diamond ring. Someone else is going to think he's going to empty the bucket of garbage over the girl's head. You know, so depending on what it is, it could be anything. So then there must be ritual. There must be something that establishes how something is done. Right? Then it works very nicely. Otherwise, how will there be a form? How does Krishna have his pastimes if there's not a form? Right? So therefore, the culture is the natural manifestation of the philosophy. Right? The philosophy is there. We serve Krishna. So how do we do that? That's the culture. Right? You're supposed to worship Krishna. How do you do that? That's the culture. So it's there. But we must remember is that the form of it is not the essence. The essence is the consciousness. The essence is the understanding. You know, and ultimately the essence is that, based on that, the essence is the devotion. Right? So ritual is there, one must have knowledge of what that is, and founded on that, then there's devotion. Therefore, the Raganuga sadhana is founded on Vaidhi sadhana. So those who avoid Vaidhi sadhana, they shouldn't fool themselves. They will never get to Raganuga sadhana. Because you can say, well, the gopis, they didn't follow Vaidhi sadhana. Yes, but they just took up Raganuga sadhana. So if you're not doing Raganuga sadhana today, right now, this moment, you're never going to do it by not following Vaidhi. Right? Because that's Krishna's recommended. If this moment you can surrender to me, that's what you should do. If you can't do that, then follow the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti. Right? So based on that, then comes the bhava. So we can see the same principle is, so this is in the ritual, is that and in the mood is that you have the vaidhi, then you have the rag. Right? In the same way as you have the Upanishads Vedanta Sutra, then you have your whole understanding of bhakti and its practices. Does that make sense? Right? So you have the knowledge, then by practicing that knowledge, that gives way to a natural, spontaneous performance. But it's based on knowledge. It's the same way as the devotional activities. They're based on that, then they move to this. So all knowledge, the knowledge then gives way to the spontaneity. That knowledge then is the foundation for all the, how you say, devotional moods and activities. Otherwise, it is sentiment. That's the difficult. That means the sentiment's not the problem, but the sentiment has to be based on the shastra, has to be based on knowledge. Otherwise, it's nothing more than sentiment, because we want the sentiment to be devotional sentiment, pure, unalloyed devotional sentiment. So here, the acharyas are saying it won't be. So it doesn't matter. We think it can be. It doesn't matter. Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say it won't be. So that's what we accept. Okay, continue. The Upanishads themselves proclaim that even after the study of the Vedas with all their branches, one's education is not complete until he studies the Upanishads, Chantogya Upanishad, chapters 6 and 7. Therefore, the teaching of the Upanishads are sometimes called Vedopanishad, or the mystery of the Vedas, Taittiriya Upanishad 1.11. Oh, Vedopanishad, oh God, no, that's another thing. They also use that in the Gita is referred to as Veda Upanishad. The fact that the Upanishads comprise the philosophical conclusions of the Vedas does not mean that they are something like the Western philosophical speculations. In the context of the Western philosophy, the truth is apprehended merely on an intellectual plane, and the method of knowledge is to explain the sense data with mental speculation. And so it's just a matter of dealing with what they call facts. And then, you know, dealing with that and trying to come up with something. But here it's a matter of the understanding of actually the essence of the Veda, which means, therefore, worship of Krishna. Like that. The Vedic method of knowledge is darshan, a systematic revelation of spiritual reality. The Upanishads are Shabda Brahma, spiritual sound vibrations. They are intended to bestow genuine realizations, vijnan, that the self is not matter but a spirit soul, aham brahmasmi, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and that the individual soul is dependent on the supreme soul, ego bahunam yo vidadhati kaman, Katha Upanishad. In the Vedas there is a prescribed way of life for the civilized man. There are many rules and duties intended to discipline and purify him. After leading such a life dedicated to self-realization and eventually forsaking all materialistic activities, the seeker meditates on the truths of the Upanishads. Thus, these truths are not merely intellectual ideas, they become a living spiritual reality. Now we see it in the Manusamhita, is that all the Upanishadic elements are explained in the aspects on sannyas. That's the main element of the duties of the sannyas, is that contemplation of the philosophy in relationship to one's life. Just seeing the material world, seeing how the material world, you know, is not actually the source of happiness and satisfaction. Right? That so many difficulties are there, and that the soul is separate from the body. This is the main contemplation. So the bulk of the explanation of sannyas is on these kind of contemplations. And a little bit is on, you know, when he should beg, when he should do this or that, or certain things. So that's very small, like that. The main is focused on this, like that. So this is then what the devotee is trying to bring himself to. Because sannyas basically means that we're functioning in the capacity of doing our duties for Krishna's satisfaction. We're not doing it for ourselves. That's sannyas. Right? That makes sense. So it's a standard that all devotees are aspiring for. Like that. Then you have the specific duties. Because we mentioned mentality is more important than the duties. So therefore, the duties are being performed of whatever varna ashram one's in, but the mentality is that of the devotee. And the devotee's devotion is based on the Upanishads. Does that make sense? So with that knowledge, then one's devotion is strong. Then whatever one's situation, it doesn't matter. It will give you the same result. Right? Does that make sense? You eat rice and dal, you know, you eat chapatis and dal, you know, you eat chapatis and sabji, you eat rice, it does the same thing. Right? It gets rid of your hunger. Does that make sense? So it doesn't really matter because you're looking at it as food. Therefore, it works. Right? Does that make sense? So, in the same way as if you're looking at varnashram as a medium for expressing your devotion to Krishna, then it doesn't matter which part you use, it gives the same effect. Right? There may be external different effects. Right? Just like eating chapatis and dal and eating rice and sabji may give you a different effect in your stomach. Right? But that's not what we're looking at. We're looking at the food element. So in the same way as varnashram, you could look at, okay, grihastha gets one result of, you know, observable material phenomena. The brahmachari gets a different result. But that's not what varnashram is for. That's just so that all the social things go on and there's interaction and something to do. Otherwise, we would get very, very bored. Right? You have an eternal living entity with nothing to do. That's a problem. Therefore, you have something to do. It's called Varnashram. It keeps you busy, like, as anything. Right? But the real point is the devotional understanding. So it's supposed to be a medium to express that. Does that make sense? Then it falls in. Then all these things, you can see all these things very nicely connect to devotional service if it's seen from the proper understanding. Otherwise, they seem very, very far away, have no connection, you know. And when they're in that state, they also can be detrimental. So the idea is that since it's given by Krishna, recommended by the acharyas, then we bring it close. We bring it close by connecting it all properly to Krishna and seeing it from that perspective. Right? So the understanding is descending, not ascending. Right? If it's descending knowledge, that means it's starting with Krishna and devotion to Krishna. Then it comes down to the particular application. Then it works good. Therefore, according to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 2.4.5, there are three stages of education. First is Shravana, or hearing from a teacher. Then Manana, or acquisition of spiritual insight and understanding by reflecting on the subject. And finally, realization in application in life, or Nididhyasana. As we can see from the history of the Western philosophy, the level of realization and practical application of spiritual knowledge was very rarely reached. Right? It's generally not taken as something that's important. You get an understanding. So basically, you're dealing with Shravana, they hear. Then Marana, you contemplate, but you're supposed to practice that knowledge. Right? Then that will give you Nididhyasana, realization. So now it's not a practice in your life, it's part of your life. So the modern only deals with Shravana, you know, hearing about it and contemplating it, if we're dealing with intellectuals. Practicing it, they don't do. Making it part of their life, they don't do. Making contemplation part of their life, that they do. Hearing and contemplating, that's part of their life. But what they're hearing and contemplating, what you're supposed to do with it, that's not part of the equation. Common people may hear and apply, but they don't contemplate. So therefore, they also don't get realization. So we see, unless this combination of contemplation with practical application is there, there is no realization. So it doesn't fully become part of the life. So unless you contemplate this philosophy and practice it, then it won't become part of the life. And therefore, we see sometimes it is found that, one's lifestyle does not reflect one's philosophy. Why would that be? Because one's not practicing that philosophy as a lifestyle. Right? We're chanting japa. We're going to, you know, temple programs, you know, festivals. We're doing some service, some preaching. But remember, that's not all of what we consider our lifestyle. It's the predominant element, it's the most important element. But what about when we're not doing those activities? Then what's the lifestyle? That's where the problem comes up. So this system is how to make that also consistent with the direct activities of devotional service. How to bring the indirect, that it is in contact with the direct. So that's through understanding this philosophy and practices, contemplating it, seeing how it applies in your life, making that practice of trying to make it work in your life. It may sometimes work, may not work. But the point is you're contemplating and you're practicing. That's the method, right? The child gets up, they start to walk, they fall on the face. They get up again, they walk some more, they fall on the face. This time they make it to the other side of the room before they bounce off the wall and then fall on the face, right? But in any case, the endeavor is there. And with time, they become good at it, right? Even the, you know, world, you know, champions and the, you know, athletic sports of running and stuff like this, they started off in the same way, you know, getting up and falling on the face. Right? So that whole thing is, if that's done, that contemplation, that practice, then one's whole life will be consistent. Like that, because one has contemplated, one has practiced all aspects of devotional service and philosophy in one's life. So that's what then time, place, and circumstance means in our particular situation. But it's consistent. So we're not living with duality, we're not subjected to duality, we're very peaceful. You can't be peaceful in duality. Right? So when that becomes reconciled, then we become very happy, satisfied. So that's what the study of the Shastras is for. It's to create this knowledge through which you can contemplate and practice, which will then result in a lifestyle of practical Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. The word Upanishad means sit nearby. That refers to acquiring spiritual knowledge from a bona fide spiritual teacher who is coming in an authoritative disciplic succession and is fixed in the absolute truth. Tad vigyanartam sagurum evabhigachet samit pani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. To understand these things properly, one must humbly approach with firewood in hand a spiritual master who is learned in the Vedas and firmly devoted to the absolute truth. Mundaka Upanishad 1-12. Okay, to understand these things properly, okay, one must humbly approach, because one thinks, well, I do not know, you tell me. Right? Like that. Doesn't mean you're not using your brain. It means I may have so much brain, know so much, but unless you have put it all together, it still doesn't matter. Right? There's great personalities who are very intelligent, who are trying to figure out how the universe works. They figured out how chaos theory works and all this. They got all these things, but they still can't get that last little piece together. Right? So therefore, if they humbly approach a Kshatriya, then it will work. Right? So now, with firewood in hand, this means when you approach, that's the ritual, is that you approach with firewood. That signifies I'm willing to do service, because I'm humbly inquiring and I'm going to apply that knowledge you give. That combination, that's what makes for, as we saw, realization. Otherwise, so here is, we've heard these things, so these two things together. That humble approach means you're going to hear, right? If you're humble, you can contemplate, because you want to understand, right? And you're willing to do service, so you'll apply it, right? Tad vini prani pate to pari prashnena sevaya. The humble attitude, the submissive inquiry, the application. That's what makes things work. Right? A spiritual master is learned in the Vedas and firmly devoted to the absolute truth. Right? Samit pani, okay. Shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Shrotriyam means, we discussed before, Shrotriyam means, someone who is very fixed, who is, one who is learned. Right, so a Kshatriya is then someone who's very learned in the Vedas. And then Brahmanishtam, he's firmly fixed in the absolute truth. He's not distracted by other things of this material world. Doesn't mean he can't deal with them. As we see Srila Prabhupada deal with the littlest things. He's sitting in that house in Butler and all that. The kid stands up for the first time. Prabhupada's the one that's there to see it and, you know, smiling and encouraging the kid and like that. There's that picture of him. So much energy is there. Like that, because that's what you do for little kids. So he can do these things. But he's fixed in devotional service. You try to deal outside of that, then there's a problem. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense? You know, I stood up, you know, now Prabhupada should look at me and like that. No, wait a minute. You know, this is the kid's, you know, he's first just starting to walk. He needs encouragement. He doesn't know anything else. He's on Anamoy, so therefore, give him a break. You're supposed to be on Anandamoy, so therefore, you shouldn't be expecting so much, you know, emotional input and all that, because, you know, does that make sense? You know, what's appropriate? Yes?
When it says spiritual master should be fixed in the absolute truth, does it mean Nishta or Bhava?
Fixed in the absolute truth. It says Brahma Nishtam. Give you any indication here? It didn't say samit pani shrotriyam, you know, pure unalloyed devotional service, prema bhakti, never fallen down and never will, and, you know, if he has any fault, then we throw him out with the garbage. Sorry, that's just American English. The Sanskrit is brahmanishtam. Means fixed. That's the whole point. So now if we take that, that means what's the range of the spiritual master? From nishta through to prema. So anything in between, in there, you know, in between and inclusive of those two, you know, that's what you're looking for. Like that. That's the thing. That's also called pure devotee. Right? So that's, these are all these synonymous words. We generally don't necessarily work on that. We work on the 100% or, you know, in the negative. But, before I used to say zero, but I think it's gone a little beyond that now. So, like that. So, does that make sense? So, so within that, what's available, you look for what's the highest. Does that make sense? So if there's somebody available who's on, you know, prema, you'll take that. If not, then you'll settle for, you know, bhava. If not, then you're just going to settle for, you know, the mandyama. So, does that make sense? So, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's saying, you know, if means, how you say? How you say? I forget what it is. It's like, he's referring, he's saying, if you can't, you know, if there's a difficulty, spiritual master's not there, left. So therefore, you don't have that association. Then find someone else, take shelter of a Mahabhagava. He's meaning someone on the platform of the Uttamadhikari, meaning in the stage of Bhava. Right? So he's saying, if your spiritual master's on the platform of prema, then you find someone who's on the platform of Bhava. Right? Can't find that, then you take the next who's in the Madhyam category. Does that make sense? So that's it. But the main point is you're fixed. It doesn't matter. One is fixed in doing that. You know. In other words, his understanding, he's devoted to the absolute truth. Yes.
How will people ever make the right choices? Because they just go out according to their perception of what is reality. Like people in India have a perception of what pizza is. And it's not pizza, so people may have a perception of...
It's paisa.
People may have a perception of what a guru should be according to their inclination.
Like he should smile a lot.
Yeah, or he should be, you know, very much inclined to my type of species or my type of personality, and that clicks well. So that may work.
It's part of it.
Level.
It's part of it means that is for choosing from amongst what would be appropriate, which one's for you. It means after you've established that this person is on the proper standard, then it's a matter of that person speaks what they say you understand. The language they use and the process, it works. But it shouldn't be based on, you know, like you were saying, is that because he smiled at me, therefore he's my eternal Lord and Master. Yes.
But being in the conditioned state, and not being based, not being fixed on the platform of nishta or any of the above, how can such a person ever make the right type of judgment?
Judgment. That's why senior devotees are supposed to help. They're supposed to present the element of who they feel is properly practicing, you know, so that then from that field, if you choose, things should work nicely for you. You know, or if it's you have local authorities, they can help you with, you know, who's coming through and who, you know, how to relate with them, how to deal, how to understand. So it's very much dependent upon others to help in that way. You also have the element Super Soul is there, so he's always quite helpful. Like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, when one actually desires to know Krishna, then he puts you in contact with bona fide spiritual master. So there is that element, you know. If you don't want to know, then you end up with not as bona fide a spiritual master. You end up with, you know, you have somebody, what is it? We used to have Guru Maharaj Ji. He was some kid or something. His mom decided he was God, so he professed it. And that went well for many years, but then at some point he made her upset, so she said, he's not God anymore, his older brother's God now. You know, like that. So a lot of people met him, you know, yeah, you know, like that. Sai Baba, I heard he has 50 million followers. So there is a lot of people who don't get that advantage that Super Soul is offering there. Yeah. Is that okay? You had something?
Well, I was just wondering about people that use that to say you should leave a spiritual master because this spiritual master is more advanced.
That's okay, but that's like saying you should give up your father because, you know, my father's, you know, got a bigger mustache, or, you know, he can do 50 push-ups. Your dad can only do 10. You know what I'm saying? That won't fly. You can follow that process, but let it be known that the Braj Basis will never accept you into their association because they won't be able to trust you. Like that. It's a very important Vedic principle, is that one doesn't jump around like that. What does that mean, that you go give up? What does it mean? You know what I'm saying? So the point is because someone can use some technical terminology or something that makes it special or something. The point is we don't work like that. The as we said is the rasa is based on tattva. And if the tattva is strong, the rasa will naturally develop. But if you run after rasa without the tattva, you will never get it. It may seem like it. Always remember the stories about Krishna are nice. If you sit down and read them, it's nice. You know, in previous, you know, ancient days, devotees used to read Krishna book. It was quite standard. So they were inspired and they felt that they were in contact with Krishna in his stories. So when devotees don't read, then if someone comes along and tells a story, then that becomes very special and, oh, they're on a different platform or something. He's saying, so you have to be very, very careful here that that's not the etiquette anyway. So whoever's suggesting that definitely can't be a Gaudiya Vaishnava, because we would never do that. And if they're trying to quote from Shastra on that, you know, approach someone senior, that's only when whatever you have to learn from your spiritual master has been learned. Then you can consider if someone has more and beyond that, then that's consideration. Just like if you're in first grade, you don't go to the, you know, second grade teacher until you've learned everything in first grade. Otherwise, if the first grader goes to second grade, he won't learn anything. You know what I'm saying? Because as we hear from the, yeah, is that okay? That's okay. Yeah. Okay, so end here. Friday? Yeah, so we'll continue on Monday.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.